did you miss me? Oh, sugar, did you miss me? Oh, precious, did you miss me? Oh, dearest, did you miss me? They come and come and kiss me. 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 Oh, baby, did you miss me? My darling, did you miss me? My darling, did you miss me? My sweetie, did you miss me? They come and come and kiss me. 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 Oh, baby, did you miss me? They come and come and kiss me. They come and come and kiss me. And kiss me and... Life may change, but it may fly not. Hope may vanish, but can die not. Truth be there, but still it burneth. Love repulse, but it returneth. Life may change, but it may fly not. Hope may vanish, but can love come and kiss me. But still it burneth. Love repulse, but it returneth. Oh, baby, did you miss me? Oh, darling, did you miss me? Oh, lover, did you miss me? Oh, sweetie, did you miss me? Oh, gorgeous, did you miss me? Oh, sugar, did you miss me? Oh, precious, did you miss me? Oh, dearest, did you miss me? Oh, baby, will you hug me, kiss me, drink me, love me, hug me, kiss me, drink me, love me? Life is mostly froth and bubble. Two things stand like stone. Kindness in another's trouble. Courage in your own.
Oh, baby, did you miss me? Oh, baby, did you miss me? Then come and come and kiss me. Then come and come and kiss me. Oh, darling, did you miss me? Oh, darling, did you miss me? Then come and come and kiss me. Then come and come and kiss me. Then come and come and...
Well, it's music by Matthew Hinson, and the words were almost by Christina Rossetti. There was a sort of verse from her huge poem, Goblin Market, which Matthew Hinson had just tweaked slightly. I don't think she wrote the word baby, for instance. It's a great pleasure to welcome to the music show Sarah Penica Smith, who's the conductor of the Gay and Lesbian Choir, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, who we just heard singing Matthew Hinson's piece, and also the composer John Peterson, who has a work being premiered tonight, a piece called Dreams and Visions. We'll come to Dreams and Visions in a moment. Let's start with the choir. Let's start with that piece. That doesn't sound terribly easy.
No, it's not terribly easy. But it was commissioned for the choir in 2001, and it's part of a larger work. There's four movements in total. But Did You Miss Me is the closing movement, and the choir's enjoyed it very, very much. We give people the opportunity to vote on which repertoire they'd like to do.
Yes.
And we had one of our 20th anniversary concerts earlier this year in June. It was called SGLC Goes Platinum, and that was 20 top songs from our last 20 years, and Did You Miss Me made the final vote. So That's the performance that you heard.
I see, I see. So you've been, this party isn't just tonight, it's been going on all year.
Yes, that's correct.
Fair enough. Now, the choir, the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, you don't have to be gay or lesbian to be in this choir.
That's true. Yeah, we take anybody who would like to come and sing with us, who would like to associate with the gay and lesbian community. So whether you're gay, whether you're lesbian, whether you identify as queer or intersex or transgender, or even just people who are allies of the community.
Right.
You know, if you would like to come and sing with us, we welcome you. It's completely unauditioned.
So you have a don't ask, don't tell policy, basically.
Well, most people don't ask very anyway. Upfront. No, we don't ask people to show their gay cards at the door. No.
What about the ability to sing?
Not necessary. We are completely unauditioned. I'm a firm believer in the fact that anybody who might show up who's not so skilled will in time learn. And the choir's fortunate enough that, you know, we have enough people who know what they're doing that we can prop up people who are still learning. And that's the way it works.
Essentially, you think that if somebody really wants to sing, they will be able to in time, at least.
Yes, absolutely. And we've had some people come in who've been pretty tentative and haven't sung maybe since primary school. In fact, that's quite common. And they learn to pick up and, you know, they end up singing music like that along with the rest of us.
You haven't had anyone you've had to hide on the back row.
Actually, the back row is a place for the stronger singers. So right. There's no shame in being in the back row. No.
There's a political agenda as well. Not so subtle political agenda, I guess. I mean, you always hear the choir singing on World AIDS Day, for example. I mean, there's a kind of calendar that the choir attends to.
Yeah, look, that's true. And sometimes we are overtly political, depending on the message, but in many ways, just the very fact of our existence, you know, wherever we sing, it becomes a bit of a political act because we are people who are being out loud and proud about who we are. And one of the things that I find most interesting about the choir is that we can pick up pretty much any piece of music, which and the words might, you know, mean one thing if a different choir sings it. But in our mouths, you know, words about love, words about seeking freedom, words about loss, take on quite a different spin. Yes. And this is something that actually really comes into play with John's composition, with Dreams and Visions, because the text means something very central and very important to our community. But the themes are universal enough that we hope different choirs will sing it and get something very different out of it as well.
Well, let's turn to John. You could be a radio presenter. You know, you did that very skillfully. John Peterson, tell us about Dreams and Visions. Tell us about the text, in fact, which is assembled rather like the one that Erkki Sventura was just talking about from different sources.
Yeah, in fact, I listened to that interview and I realised I'd done much the same thing.
Yes.
And I'd virtually given free rein on putting text together for this piece, and it's a big 50-minute work, and you have to come up with some sort of overriding theme or something that's going to link everything together, and I ultimately decided on four separate movements, four large-scale movements on different themes. But for the text, I literally went around and plundered poetry from everywhere, and instead of using entire stanzas of selected poetry, I would only take maybe a couple of lines, and I move quite freely from poem to poem, often by the same poet or by different poets, to create my own type of narrative.
Yes, so in a way the text is your text, but made using other people's words.
That's right, yes.
We're going to listen to a little bit of it from a rehearsal, Lux Aeterna. Maybe you could tell us about this before we hear it.
This is the third movement of the piece, and it's about loss and death. Prior to the part we're going to hear, we've had a section which is mostly unaccompanied choir singing a text taken from Thomas Nash, who wrote about the plague in London in the 17th century. And, of course, the resonance of the text for the gay and lesbian community about the AIDS epidemic in 20 years and 25 years ago was immediately apparent to me, and I just thought this is so relevant. So immediately prior to that, I had sort of this text, which is a little bit dark and sort of quite not distressing, but certainly sad. And the Lux Aeterna, I felt, at least brings a little hope back to the third movement and ends on a very, very sort of positive note.
Thank you.
Well, there's a small section, Lux Aeterna, from Dreams and Visions by John Peterson, a piece which is having its complete premiere tonight in Marrickville Town Hall in Sydney. The Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir, 20 years old this year, was singing there, and we'll be singing it tonight. And we heard also the mezzo-soprano Julia Wee and the baritone Paul Smith. The words, of course, as you've both suggested, are very important in anything that this choir sings, more so, I suppose, than in most choirs. Does that mean that you spend a great deal of time working on diction?
Yes, it does. And also, just from a point of vocal technique, I believe that getting your diction together also helps, you know, with the tuning. So there are more reasons than one for looking after diction. But yeah, we believe very strongly that music with a message, is the greatest opportunity you can take for sharing how you feel and your experiences with the world.
And if the diction isn't right, then the message isn't
this is
communicated.
True. We have printed the libretto in the program, just because we think it would be nice for people to have the opportunity to read it. But we're hopeful that, you know, people will be able to close their eyes and listen tonight.
Yes. And John, when you're writing a piece like this, as opposed to, say, a piece of chamber music or a piece of orchestral music, where there are no texts and where there might even be a sort of generic title like string quartet or symphony, do you find that you compose differently, that you think differently about your music?
Oh, absolutely. I think when Sarah first suggested to me that she wanted me to write a 50-minute piece, if somebody
had
approached
me... Did you say that? It has to be 50 minutes?
Yes.
Well, we started talking about maybe an hour.
Oh, yes. I got them down to 50. But if it had been a commission for an instrumental piece of 50 minutes, I might have actually been more daunted by the task. Mm. But the fact that the text would actually help the composition and be a way of giving thematic relevance to each section of the piece meant, in fact, that I really didn't start on the music till I was actually very sure of what the text was. Mm. And so that immediately made sense to me how the piece would be formed once the text was in place.
Well, in this case, putting a text together is part of the compositional process, isn't it?
Yes, and actually that took the most time. Putting the text together was probably, I don't want to say how long, but quite a long time, and then writing the music was much easier.
It was a
task.
Double.
It was a much easier task, yes.
Well, tonight's concert also includes music which doesn't feature the choir. Mm-hmm. There's chamber music, and there's a number of young composers featured as well. This is also part of what the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir does to encourage talent in others.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have a very strong commitment to Australian music, and we do like supporting emerging composers. Look, they're not all young, but they are all relatively new to the performance circuit in Sydney. And so we have six pieces in the first half tonight from a range of different composers. A couple of them are choir members, and the works are all really, really different. So even if, you know, one of the pieces might not be to your taste, or you think you're not all that into Australian music, I guarantee you that you will find something that you will enjoy out of these pieces.
I'll give the details of the concert in a moment, but let's listen to one more piece sung by the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir. This is a piece by Gordon Kerry, and it's a setting of A. E. Housman's poem, The Colour of His Hair, written in response to the trial of Oscar Wilde.
Oh, who is that young sinner with the handcuffs on his wrist? Oh, they're taking him to prison.
Music by Gordon Carey, a setting of A.E. Housman's poem, The Colour of His Hair. And it was sung by the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Choir.